The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 721. It's the 27th of February, 2017. On the podcast today, I have Tony Gilby, MD of Talao Energy, talks about the news regarding the development partner for the CBM power project in Botswana. Also on the podcast, I have Matt Lofgren, Chief Executive Officer of NostraTerra, that's NTOG, talks about their second Permian Basin acquisition and also about other developments at the company. Also on the podcast, Marcello Bravo, CEO of Oxford Pharmascience, that's OXP, gives a company update which includes positive data on its OXP0 ibuprofen product. Plus, I also have Oil and Gas Sector Authority, Malki, talks about the following stocks: Sirius Petroleum, that's SRSP, President Energy, PPC, and Far Limited, which is listed in Australia. Plus, as always, top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets this morning.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Tony Gilby, Managing Director of Talao Energy. Tony, thank you for coming on.
Good morning, Justin.
It's an extra special podcast for an extra special bit of news. Now, let's get straight into it. I've just literally been skimming through it, but it seems good. Can you take us over? First and foremost, the title is of the RNS, Development Partner for CBM to Power Project. So, Tony, take us through the highlights here. What does it all mean? Why is it significant?
Certainly, Justin. It's a very significant announcement for Talao, for the company, in that we have been working on bringing to fruition a power development partner for some time now, and we have settled on Independent Power Corp from the UK to fulfil that role for the up to 100 megawatt project. They're a specialist power development company, and we're very pleased to have them on board.
Excellent stuff. So what's next, Tony? What's the next step here? Because, I mean, the share price is reacting positively because this has been talked about sort of in the background for a while. So what's the next point here? Because I know you've got the request for proposal in, or you're submitting that. It's going to be in before July, I think. But this is a binding agreement, isn't it? So it's not just you're not just talking about this. It's almost a done deal, is it?
It is a binding heads of agreement, Justin, and IPC bring to the table as well supporting documents for in principle funding of the up to 100 megawatt project, and IPC also bring costs to the table to assist us in submitting the RFP, which, as you mentioned or alluded to, is in July. So we'll still start out with a 10 megawatt project is our initial objective, and IPC will assist in terms of the generation side of the equation there and to assist in the funding with that as well. And once the risk is taken out of the project, or the remaining risk with the 10 megawatts, we'll move up, all else being equal, to upwards of 100 megawatts. So we're in a very dominant position in Botswana now. We're the only ones with gas reserves, environmental approval, and now a strong development partner to bring those reserves, to commercialise those reserves via being the first independent power producer in the country.
Yeah, and this is a significant step, isn't it, towards that. And I was just doing some research on, you know, the energy shortage, the chronic energy shortage in Botswana, and also looking, when you first came on the podcast, you mentioned about the potential in the Southern African region. I didn't realise that. I sort of looked into it. And also the size of population in South Africa, and also the issues they have. So this is a major step, isn't it, ahead along that road, the journey that you have in your head. And you must be very pleased with this.
Oh, indeed, and the fact that IPC also has a relationship with GE out of the UK kind of keeps that whole process ticking along as well. We like the way that GE approaches the business, and with IPC, Independent Power, with their relationship with GE, we retain that link as well. IPC's relationship with GE is primarily out of the UK, and therefore we hope to leverage that for the benefit of shareholders in terms of UK export finance as well, and that sort of access to funds to assist a project such as this, and to bring it to bear fruit earlier than otherwise would be the case.
Yeah, so ideally, do you know when you first came on the podcast, Tony, we did ask, I mean, because you've done, you know, you've been involved with Sangchang Gas and, you know, and Arrow Energy, and the potential there in Australia was big, but you think it's bigger here in the African region. I mean, and that is the case, isn't it? Because there is a real need for this, and there's not as much competition like you had in Australia, is there?
That's very true. In fact, where the only ones who can deliver this project within a reasonable time frame, and we're the only ones, of course, with reserves, the environmental approval for upstream, and now that strong downstream power development partner with access to additional funding, Justin. So that is very, very good for the company, for our shareholders, and ultimately for the people of Botswana when we get this project up and running. It provides a very significant upside for our shareholders, and this particular deal announced really means there's one less hurdle to overcome on the path to glory, if you will. It is a very significant hurdle we've overcome with bringing IPC into the team to produce ultimately the first gas to power in an entire country.
Yeah, and do you see this? I mean, like I said, you've been very successful in the last two companies in CBM. I mean, do you see this as, you know, almost a hat trick here, and thinking, yes, this can happen again? You know, what is your vision here? I mean, you talked about, I mean, you know, the potential in Southern Africa, but is that a real thing you're going for?
The upside is enormous in Africa, and with the fact that the country is so short, in fact, the entire region is very short of energy. Justin, it creates a much greater opportunity than what we had initially in Australia. And of course, as you alluded to, we did very well in Australia as well. So I think this is as you say, this is on track to be a hat trick or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I can really see much more upside in Botswana compared to the very good results that our shareholders experience out of coalbed methane in Australia.
Excellent. Okay, Tony. So after this now, like I said, just to reiterate, what will you be looking to do next? What are we likely to hear from you next as far as news is concerned?
Well, we'll be looking at continuing to develop the response for proposal that the Botswanan government provided to us, and there'll be milestones reached as we move towards submitting that response to the request for proposal in a few months' time. We'll be looking at continuing to flow gas out of our wells in Botswana and enhancing the project all around. So there's quite a lot coming up, Justin, and we'll be continuing to release that as milestones are reached.
Excellent. Well, you know how it works now, Tony. On the podcast, I do like to ask for three reasons why someone who isn't following you should hit that follow button on your page. So could you give us those three, please, Tony?
Certainly. Well, we remain by far now the most advanced upstream gas company in Botswana. It would be the first point where we're moving surely and very steadily towards being the first gas to power producer in Botswana would be the second point. And each one of those aspects of the business would combine to normally create a company of significant size, and given a fair wind, we may well achieve both of those objectives, which the third point would be we're well on track to be a company of significant size as we continue to grow and continue to meet and overcome hurdles to become the first gas producer or gas to power producer in Botswana.
Tony, it's great to hear from you, and thank you for taking the time, because I know you're over there in the Far East there, so it's quite late, and I do appreciate the update, and I know lots of shareholders will, because it's exciting news, and it's got the share price rallying. As I'm looking right now, it's up around 17%, which is quite nice, above that 10 pence level, so it's good news. Tony, thank you very much, and I very much look forward to chatting to you again in the near future. Thank you.
Wonderful, Justin. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Matt Lofgren, Chief Executive Officer of Nostroterra. That's NTOG ticker. Matt, thanks for coming on.
Hey, Justin. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's been a busy few times for you. And I'm looking at the chart there. The share price seems to be heading in the right direction. And you had a bit of news out last week and we couldn't catch up. Last week, so we're going to cover it today. But before we do that, Matt, I always like to do this. There's new listeners to the podcast all the time, and so they may not be aware of you. So can you explain what Nostroterra is all about, please?
Yeah, we're a oil and gas exploration and production company. So we go out, we find places that we think are interesting, and we drill and produce oil and sell it.
Excellent. Okay, so the news last week was entitled Second Permian Basin Acquisition and Receipt of Funds. Take us through the detail, if you will, Matt.
It's an interesting little acquisition. I think for people who aren't as familiar, it might be helpful to give a little background too.
Yeah.
But, you know, right now, and this kind of goes towards our strategy of what we're doing and how we're getting these deals done. But we're during a time of oil prices that have been down. And I think everybody at this point figures that the bottom's in and it looks like we're recovering. And even in the last week, I think we're kind of breaking out to a new level possibly. But anyway, we're in a downturn where oil prices have decreased substantially. And so what we've done is we've tried to move quickly to decrease our overheads while repositioning our portfolio. So we had the Chisholm Trail prospect, which was our primary asset at the time in the U.S., and we sold it at a profit. And that's news that's come out recently, and you and I have spoken about that. But we sold that at a profit. We got in early in that play. Every well was a commercial success, everything was great about it. And we were getting good revenue during the time. And then eventually, even though oil was down in the 40s per barrel, we still sold at a profit. And that prospect was a whole bunch of smaller non-op or non-operated positions. So a lot of different operators that could pull you and force pull you in, which you give you a short fuse or a short period of time to say if you want to participate in that well or not. So not a large element of control.
Mm-hmm.
And so we used that time to take an asset that was getting a lot of attention, and we were able to sell at a nice premium to the value, the value that we had on it. We used that to reposition our portfolio. We started paying down some debt significantly and rolling our funds into other assets where we do have a much larger stake and a more of an element of control, controlling the operations. So that led to the Pine Mills acquisition and the Permian Basin. And the Pine Mills, you saw what we did there. We did the 80% purchase of Pine Mills where we saw an opportunity. We reacted and moved quickly to acquire that asset.
Mm-hmm.
We followed on with another acquisition for further working interest, which gets us closer and positioned to go towards 100% working interest. And then at the same time, we've been improving operations there. So that's gone to giving us some nice cash flow off of that asset. And then that leads to the Permian Basin. So the Permian Basin, what we've done there was we did an acquisition just a little bit ago recently. It was a small one. We put out an RNS about it just so shareholders could get an idea of why we're going in the area. We weren't trying to sing that we were super excited about that tiny deal, but we were trying to start the laying the groundwork of why we're going into the area and what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So today, now I'm caught up to where we are today. Our strategy there is twofold. We're picking up existing assets that we believe have more upside. The upside is in two areas. One is through workovers of the existing wells, but more importantly, and this one today, really hits at home, that we're building inventory of additional locations for the future. So while we ended up with a small acquisition price, we've got wells that we can work over. And, if you look at the last acquisition that we did in the Permian and the workover, we went more than threefold increase in production with just a little bit of money. So it's a little investment. It's a nice ROI. And the production increases, and you do that over and over, and, pennies turn into pounds, as we know. But on the other hand, as I was saying, the bigger piece here is that we end up with all these locations, 18 locations from today's acquisition or last week's acquisition, 18 locations, 9 of them are proven locations, PUDs as you call them in the industry, but 9 locations that are proven that we can drill, and the other 9 are probable locations, which are also, you know, relatively low risk. And the neat thing about this, and this is part that a lot of people really don't understand, those locations are HBP'd, held by production. Mm-hmm. So we can drill those at any time. We didn't just sign up for a work program where we've got to get drilling those. We can drill those anytime. We can drill them tomorrow. We can drill them in 100 years and have our grandkids drilling these if we want. But we can drill them whenever we want. So we can wait for oil prices to go up. We can wait till we've got more money that comes in. We can do whatever we want to do on these. Right now, you've got our neighbors that are already moving rigs out and drilling. Hence, they're economic and they make sense to drill today. But we have all the flexibility.
Yeah, yeah. Realistically, you know, you must have some kind of a work program in place then. So what ideally will be the sort of work schedule here? I mean, how soon? Like you said, you know, you've got 18 drilling locations here, and it's really much about the potential, 9 proven and mm-hmm. 9 probable. So, mm-hmm. you know, how is the work program going forward? When do you expect to do the first sort of work over here?
Well, the first workover is exactly where we are right now. We've already started contracting out prior to the acquisition. We started contracting the rig to get the rig over, and that's going to be happening right away within days. So we'll have that workover, the first of the workover coming up, and there's several workovers we can do on the wells, and again, that's at our pace as well. So that's the initial focus. Do these workovers, get a nice little ROI, and increase production there while we've got the flexibility on the new wells.
Yeah, and I suppose when you have lots of options, and you are now building up a little portfolio there of options that don't cost a huge amount, you know, it can have, mm-hmm. You know, sort of material, you know, upside potential for the company, I suppose, can't it?
No, yeah, I mean, you see a lot of people who go out there and they acquire a new prospect and get a nice reaction of the new prospect they got. Mm-hmm. We just got a new prospect. We just got a new prospect at the same time of acquiring some existing wells. So these existing wells, you know, like I said, incrementally, they'll add to our production. We've got all sorts of opportunities there that we can do at our own pace. And key to all of this, we did this with existing cash. Yeah. So Pine Mills is putting off some cash for us. We've got existing cash funds in the bank from divestiture, and we're in good shape.
Exactly. Yeah, I was just going to say, and so like what, $60,000 it costs? Is that right?
The acquisition, yeah. And yeah, the workovers, like I said, they all vary in size.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And I was just going to say, I thought you were going to miss out on that then. It's through existing cash, which is always good to know mm-hmm. for shareholders. Excellent, Matt. And going forward, apart from this, other parts of the company there, what are you looking at? And what's the next sort of milestone in other areas there?
Well, you know, we got a lot keeping us busy. So a lot that we're focused on. You'll see a lot of news flow coming out of Texas, out of the U.S. So we've got 2 different focus areas there. We always want to have a portfolio. We have some activity in Egypt, as you're familiar. Mm-hmm. And, you know, timing on that, we'll see what happens. But, you know, some other changes I think that I should point out while we're talking are some changes that we made to the board. We made our first change about a year and a half ago, bringing on a new chairman. And in the last couple weeks, we brought in a new technical director, a great guy, really smart, very thorough. And I think he's a great addition to our team. And so that's not just he's young enough and he's active enough that it adds an element where we can leverage our board, our experience into other opportunities, which I think will create some upside for shareholders as well.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Matt, you know, the pack drill here, you know, every time we come on, and I say this because people listen to the story, and sometimes it takes, you know, quite a few repeats of the story, you are changing. Every time you come on, you're evolving. But give mm-hmm. us 3 reasons why someone isn't following you right now, and they're liking the sound of this, you know, just to sort of underline those the reasons, you know, or the potential you have. Give us in 3 bullet points, why should someone hit that follow button on your page on Vox, please?
Okay. Yeah. So the first thing I'll say is that as an oil and gas producer, we're actually producing. Mm-hmm. it may sound odd, but it's a refreshing thing. We're actually producing, and we've got net cash flow coming from the field. So we're not just sitting on discoveries that are interesting. We're actually producing and making money out there. Following on to that, we're reinvesting. And so this is the second point. We're reinvesting the cash flow to grow the company. And following on there, the third point is that it positions us not just for today, but for bigger upside as oil prices increase as well. So we're growing at lower oil prices. And frankly, I don't want them to skyrocket. I mean, yeah, we'll make a lot more money, but I want to continue to use this time to do smart acquisitions like we just did last week to build up our inventory and our current production.
Yeah, I was just going to say, now the, you know, like you said, you've seen the oil price bottom and people are quite confident it's going north from here. Are you still finding opportunity? Well, you have already, but is it getting harder mm-hmm. to find opportunities now?
No, it's not getting harder, but there's going to be more money that's chasing and getting more confident out there to spend, but it's not quite there yet. But you know, you still, just because oil has gone from 35 to 40 to 50, that still is not covering it for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So a lot of people are still hurting very much. I mean, if you brought on debt at $90 oil mm-hmm. and here you are at 50, it's not changing your world too much. And so that's going to be some time here to work through a lot of these opportunities that are keep getting in front of us.
Yeah, well, exactly. I suppose if people are, you know, actually, you know, in debt, and like you said, they've got money, they're still having to pay interest and they're still not making money, they still want to offload those assets, don't they? Because, at the moment, they can't do anything with them. Excellent. Matt, good to chat to you, and look forward to chatting to you again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
You bet. Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Marcello Bravo, CEO of Oxford Pharma Sciences, OXP. Marcello, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Yeah, it's nice to get you on because I've seen your name, your company's name, pop up quite a lot on Vox and on the most followed list and on social media as well. So it'd be nice to get an overview because the ideal thing about podcasts is that, you know, people are quite busy and sometimes they haven't got time to sort of research and go through RNSs. So it's nice to get an overview on a podcast, just listen to it. And so first and foremost, Marshall, I want to ask everyone who comes on the podcast is to give a summary as to what Oxford Pharma Science is all about, please.
Okay, Oxford Pharma Science is a company specializing in the redevelopment of existing approved of patent medicines to make them better, safer, and easier to take. Our lead program, and what you hear a lot about, is the redevelopment of the NSAIDs. The NSAIDs are the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. This is aspirin, ibuprofen, naproxen, the most prevalent, most prescribed drug category. You know, aspirin has been around for over 100 years. Ibuprofen was invented here in the UK by the Boots Company, one of my former employers. We all know these drugs. We all have used these drugs. And as all drugs, they have side effects. One of the main side effects of the NSAIDs, a side effect that prevents more widespread use and utility out of the drug is the gastric side effect. You know, they're irritants. They will, at high doses over long periods of time, or when you start getting older, when you're over 65, these drugs will cause damage to your GI tract. You know, they cause erosions and ulcers, and we're working to address that.
Excellent. So at the moment, Marcello, how many products do you have there? How many drugs are you looking at?
Yeah, so what we do is apply a certain drug delivery platform. So OXP0 is a drug delivery platform that can be used with a number of drugs, but you know, the initial program is with the NSAIDs. And we have redeveloped the two main NSAIDs at the moment, ibuprofen and naproxen. They're the best known for the treatment of chronic conditions, you know, arthritis and sciatica and so on. But they're also over-the-counter products, you know, used for daily management of pain and fever. We've redeveloped those two. They're well advanced. They're in the commercial stage, really. But we're also expanding the pipeline to apply to other instances as well.
Yeah, and of course, they're very well known, ibuprofen and, you know, and other things. So is this market quite big, isn't it?
It's the NSAIDs is a $12 billion market. It's all generic. It's all gone off patent. Nonetheless, it's growing. So ibuprofen, the ibuprofen molecule, for example, growing double digit outside the North America and Europe. It's a growing molecule. Same thing with naproxen, but there's also diclofenac and others.
Excellent stuff. Okay, so last week you released an RNS highlighting positive exploratory PK study data on ibuprofen there. Can you take us through the details of this and what it means and the significance, please, Marcelo?
Yeah, so this is a culmination of technical work that we carried on for quite some time in the lab to basically increase our control of the technology. This is a controlled release platform. Mm-hmm. We did a lot of work to really expand our ability to control the speed of release, our ability to sustain the release, and so on. We filed a patent late last year in this, so we were very happy with that. And now this is about getting data to support that patent, but also to allow us to move our program forward. So what we've done here is demonstrated that we can make ibuprofen bioequivalent, but we can also make it very fast acting, and those are two very good outcomes. The reason is that if your drug is bioequivalent, basically your regulatory pathway, what you need to do to get the drug registered and approved for sale, becomes much simpler. So, for example, for some of our applications, which is about taste masking of ibuprofen for over-the-counter products, the regulatory pathway becomes extremely simple if the product is bioequivalent. You basically just use this type of data and you get your product approved. But then if you're going for the safety claim, for a prescription product, the fact that you can make it bioequivalent also simplifies things because you don't have to demonstrate efficacy. The fact that we've managed to accelerate the absorption, the release, and provide for a very fast product is also very interesting, particularly in over-the-counter markets. But there are some NSAIDs where the application of that benefit provides for very strong differentiation. For example, naproxen is disadvantaged versus ibuprofen is that it takes quite a long time for the onset, for the drug to get to the efficacy level. It takes about 2 hours. We're going to go now and try to reapply these technologies on naproxen. We achieve the same results. We have a really strong differentiated naproxen form, fastest in market. Yeah.
Okay, and so that's next. That's the next sort of significant milestone, is it?
A significant milestone for the company is, as I said in January, is receiving feedback from the FDA, from the regulator in North America, mm-hmm. To clarify the regulatory pathway both for prescription and OTC markets. The U.S. market is a critical market, is a very important market, very strong on NSAIDs. We're trying to get clarity from the FDA on what's going to be required to get these products approved for sale and registered. That's going to happen. We expect to receive that feedback before the end of this quarter, and that's really going to allow us to progress the commercialization of these assets.
I see. And I noticed that you said then, I did see one of your presentations previously, that you mentioned your background. So and I always like to sort of, because it's the first time on the podcast, give an overview. So your background is from Boots, is that correct? And what brought you to Oxford Pharma?
Well, I have a lot of background. I've been around for a while. So
okay.
So I'm a veteran. I worked for Procter & Gamble. I started working in Cincinnati, Ohio. I'm originally from Latin America. I went to university in the U.S., ended up working for Procter & Gamble in Cincinnati, and then leaving the U.S. to work with P&E around the world. And I had a long career with them, 16 years. Then I came to the U.K., went to business school, London Business School, from where I joined Boots. And in Boots, that's when I started getting familiar with the NSAIDs and ibuprofen. I was working with the international brands business, Boots Healthcare International, that owned the Nurofen brand before it was sold on to Reckitt and Benckiser. But I left Boots to start a business, which was Chapter One of this company, Oxford Pharma Science, which I'm the founder of.
Yeah. And so essentially, if I'm an investor listening to this now, I'm thinking, okay, it sounds very interesting. So what's the potential here, upside? I know it's pretty hard to put a ballpark figure there, but if everything goes to plan, then what is the potential upside here for Oxford Pharma Science?
Well, as you pointed out, it's a huge market, dense. It's over $12 billion. I think we're creating it's a pain is a very interesting market. There's major unmet patient needs, but there's no innovation, and there won't be innovation. There's market dynamics are such that people are not developing the next generation pain management drugs. So it's really about trying to work with the drugs that we have now and trying to make them better. And I think we're coming up with a real differentiation in this vast marketplace. Just ibuprofen and naproxen account for, I think, $5 or $6 billion of those $12 billion I mentioned. And we have now best-in-class differentiated molecules in that space. So that is critical. But the other important thing is that these are near-term opportunities. You know, it's not going to take 10 years and billions of dollars to take them to market. Yeah. Some of the applications are really quick to market. Even the more complex ones, you know, let's say where you're claiming GI safety, we've gone to the FDA with a proposal for a phase 3 protocol that is really quite simple. So that's the clarity we expect to receive in the next few weeks. And then we're well funded, you know, so we're a company that has over 20 million pounds in the balance sheet, which allows us to get on with the work we need to do.
Yeah, I see. Okay, so you're saying that, sort of last question there, you're saying that it doesn't take a long time here, so you know, to get to market. So what are we talking time frame wise?
For example, the MHRA here in the UK agreed an 8-week trial with endoscopic endpoints to approve the GI claim. So you're talking about a relatively short trial. Hmm. We've gone with the same proposal to the FDA. It may be that they want a longer trial, but it won't be a huge trial. And endoscopic endpoints are very, you know, are measurable. It's a trial that's easy to quantify. Based on our data, we can assume relatively, I wouldn't say modest, but, you know, not huge trial sizes. So you're talking about programs that, you know, you could be submitting your protocol for approval, your dossier for approval to the regulator in a couple of years once you get going with it, you know, or less. You know.
Yeah, yeah, okay. All right, so...
Some applications could, you know, if you're just going for taste masking and over-the-counter application, you know, it could be much faster.
Yeah. I see. Okay. Well, Martello, on the podcast every day, I'll highlight the top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets. And people do that by hitting the follow button, obviously, on the page of the company. So for you now, if someone's listening and thinks it sounds interesting, can you give us 3 more reasons why anyone not following you should hit that follow button on your page, please?
Well, we have a strong differentiation in a large market space, with near-term opportunities, and we're well-funded and well-capable of delivering. Yeah.
Marvellous. Martello, lovely to have you on, and I look forward to, you know, speaking to you again off the back of some important news in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much, Martello.
Thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is oil and gas sector authority, writer, blogger, podcaster, Malky. Happy Monday morning, Malky.
A very good morning to you, Justin.
Yeah, I almost lost what track day it was. Oh, someone's texting me the day there. Almost lost what track day it was. It's an awful gloomy day, but you had a nice weekend, Marky, apparently, or was it last Friday? You were doing show busy things and rubbing shoulders with all execs.
Yes, I was at the famous Scottish Oil Club's dinner on Friday night, which went well into Saturday morning, and then a number of us were at the airport in Edinburgh with delays and feeling slightly the worst of the wear, but it was great to see so many people in slightly more upbeat manner, I thought, on Friday night than this time last year.
Yeah. Well, that's awful as well, though. When you had a long night and you get to the airport and you got a delay, that's not good. Is it? You just want to get home then, don't you? You know.
Okay. British Airways will add 2 hours to your 2 hour delay. Thank you.
Oh, nice. Right. So, what are we chatting about today, Marky?
Right. Well, I'm talking about 3 companies today. I mentioned some of them before. This is Sirius Petroleum, SRSP, President Energy, and back to my old friend Fire Limited.
Okay, cool. Well, let's Sirius, I think they're a bit there. Are they rising there? I think they were when I last looked. And yes, they're up just shy of, well, over half of 1%. So what's happening at Sirius then, Archie?
Well, Sirius has been a slow burner and very much for the last year or so. And this is an interesting outfit. It's a Nigeria play, so not everybody's cup of tea. But they raised a bit of money. They raised 2 million quid last week. They keep just raising small amounts of money to keep them going. But the raise last week of 2 million quid was important for them and for shareholders because it was oversubscribed. More importantly, they've got a plan to drill in that Aurora field in the first half of this year. They've put in a couple of deals already. Most noticeably, recently, they tied up with Schlumberger, which is important. But the good thing is that the placing last week, which went well, as I said, makes that drilling program closer because they are using the 2 million proceeds to put down deposits on large pieces of kit and long lead item pieces of kit that need to be paid for in advance for delivery. So shareholders in Sirius have been a patient lot. They know that this is an interesting one to see how it goes. I'm sort of reasonably happy that that management is doing what it says on the tin. I think that there will be more corporate activity in this stock as that time comes closer. But they've got themselves quite a good bunch of people they're working with, companies they're working with. And if you've been waiting for the moment for Sirius, then it just took one step further last week.
Marvellous. Okay, SRSP there. And what's the next one you're looking at, Billy?
I'm looking at President Energy. I had a long chat with Peter Levine, who's the sort of long-standing sort of founder and financier of this business. Very highly regarded in the industry is Mr. Levine, and I've got a lot of time for him. Things haven't gone that well for President over the last couple of years, and last year was a shed load of unnecessary, unpleasant, you know, not their fault. Mechanical problems and so on, but right now they are. This is an Argentina play, Justin, mm-hmm. And so right now they are. They have a Paraguay interest as well, but this is mainly, at the moment, the Argentina play, where they have a very interesting, quite a large number of wells, and they have started their workover program, and announced last week that they are underway. Now, they've got a target of 1,200 barrels a day by September, which I think they'll easily make, could easily make it quite a bit more. The point is that, you know, all they're doing here is getting this high-quality rig to, in some cases, just go back in and where existing rigs have been up maintenance, and then they can increase the production from there. Other ones which have been closed in, they won't all be successful, but I suspect that the enough, at least enough successful to make that 1,200 barrels a day target, and probably more. Peter Levine is one of the most determined men you will ever find in the oil industry. He's extremely cross with himself and obviously a number of other people that the stake has got this far, because he knows he's been backed by a bunch of shareholders that have given him a lot of backing. And he is absolutely determined to make sure this works. Mm. Now, you can't necessarily say that the determination makes it work, but I've never felt anything more strongly than in my call with him when he was in Argentina last week, was that if there's any way that he can make this happen, it will happen. Yeah. Now, I've been watching President right from the start, and I believe it could happen. So I think the messages for shareholders of President Energy, it's going to be quite fun this summer. I suspect we'll have better news coming through as these workovers continue. Hang on in there is probably the right answer, Justin.
Yeah, well, if you're a shareholder, it's always nice to have someone driving the company there with that will and determination to make it work, you know, because it's built on passion and, it's a where there's a will, there's a way, you know?
Absolutely right. And there's no one more likely to do that than Peter Levine.
Yeah, okay. And the final stock, Malky.
Well, it's FAR Limited, F-A-R, and I'm afraid that because this is quoted in Australia, and a number of people can't do it, but I'm sure Vox Markets will be able to. facilitate something, or at least point people in the right direction. The bottom line is that, you know, the readers of the blog know that I've been banging on about this one for a long time. Far is the smaller partner in the Senegal discovery, which was made by Cairn, and at that time with ConocoPhillips. Conoco are exiting their the major plays, and they effectively farmed it out to Woodside, who at the moment don't have legal go at it because Far wanted to preempt it all. It's in the sort of the ballpark with the government at the moment. The bottom line here is that they announced last week that the drilling at SNE-5, which is the current well in Senegal, and this is not an exploration well. This is a what they call a development optimization well. This is just to find out how big the field is and so on. Same will go for SNE-6, which will drill back to back with this. I think they'll drill a couple more exploration wells actually during the year. If you put in here that Far are carrying the higher numbers, but I know who I would believe out of this lot, and it's Far. They're going for, they've got 641 million barrels of P2 in there, and it's going to be higher than that. And they've got a peak production of 140,000 barrels a day. This production will be 2021 to 2023. Government wanted it to be 2021. Far have got 2022. I don't know what will happen to Cairn. My guess is that there will be some selling out of this. What you've got to bear in mind is two things. First of all, Cairn have moved up by 70% on the back of this news over the last year, and Cairn haven't moved at all. Far haven't moved at all. This will happen at some stage. You know, this is a sort of almost like a price equalization. The market have not worked out that Far is worth probably four times what it's quoted at the moment. You bear in mind 15% of 140,000 barrels a day, 641 million barrels, whichever way you want to look at it, the stock is far too cheap. Whether or not they get to preempt and get that extra stake, I don't think it makes a lot of difference. If they work out that they would rather be well in with the oil minister of Senegal, which they are at the moment, they're very popular there. Senegal and Mauritania, as you know, one of the most exciting parts of the whole world, actually. But Western Africa here, where BP just farmed in with Kosmos a little further north, and here, the most exciting. This stake is worth a lot of money, whether it's put up with part of Cairn State to sell to a major, or whatever. This is worth a lot of money, and I have to say that that we will see more from Senegal. My spies tell me that there are one or two more licenses about to be offered in Senegal, and if Far have behaved themselves, as I know they have done, they must have a shout at that as well. So, all in all, one of the most undervalued stocks in my portfolio at seven, well, it's nearly 8 cents now, to be honest, at 8 cents. I've got a valuation in at 25 cents. I noticed the company broker have come, the Australian company broker have just come out with 30 cents. It's close to being a no-brainer, as I know, Justin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, do you know what? I knew a well-connected man, Malky. I didn't realise you had spies in Senegal. That's quite impressive. Marvellous, Malky. Thanks for that, fella. And good to update on a Monday morning, as always. And look forward to speaking next week.
My pleasure, Justin. Look forward to it.
All right, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Kennedy Ventures, that's KENV. At four, Aminex, AEX. At three, they featured a lot in this list in the last few days. It's 88 Energy, 88E's ticker there. Also being featured a lot, Ectech, number two. EQT is the ticker there. And number one, I had the CEO on the podcast on Friday, newly listed on Friday, Safran Energy, S-R-O-N. All right, here's the top five most liked RNSs on Vox Markets this morning. At five, ECR Minerals. That's proposed subscription. Sorry, easy for me to say. Subscription, proposed issue of warrants, and issue of equity. At four, Thor Mining, THR, half-yearly report. At three, most liked, New Oil and Gas, NUOG, award of options to directors. At two, Harvest Minerals, HMI, updated resource at a rapid fertilizer project. And number one, most liked RNS, on the platform this morning was Andalas Energy and Power ADL Operations Update. That's it for the podcast. Don't forget, listen, if you know of a stock or company that you think should be on other people's watch lists, please, 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 please. This feature lives and breathes by your input. Go to the voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. Click the link there where you see the question. It says, do you know of a stock that you think should be on people's watch lists? Please click here and fill in the form, and I could be featuring it on a future podcast. Thanks for that submission. I will read that out if you do submit it, because I'm looking for one now. I think the last one I had was Friday, Thursday. So please get in. There's no queue. If your company gets there first, then I'll read it out on tomorrow's podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.